We describe the period from 1500 to 1700 as early modern because it partakes both of the medieval past and the modernity to come. So how could we use that notion to do the history of women? In many ways, it's hard to see how the great narratives and events of our era, the Renaissance, the Reformation, and the Civil War, impacted specifically on women. And yet, some of the key factors in what we call early modernity were shaped around gender. Social discipline, with the enforcement of domestic and civic order through religious law and its decline at the end of our period. The political crisis of the English Revolution, and the birth of capitalism in the late 17th century, with the notion of polite society appearing at the same time, all brought into play particular ideas, some of them new and some of them much older, about the role of women. They opened some doors and they closed others. But let's think first about methodology. Women's history tries to recover an aspect of life that was rarely explicitly addressed in the records of the time. Most women, for most of our period, couldn't write or didn't write. Many of the areas of personal life we're most interested in, like marriage, social lives, and childbirth, are barely mentioned in the few diaries and letters that survive. So we have to be creative, reading between the lines or against the grain of the records that we have, asking of the archive precisely those questions that early moderns didn't. The fullest descriptions of women's roles come in printed advice books, like the vast domestical duties by the clergyman William Googe. But these are not descriptions, but prescriptions, so we need to read them as aspirational or advisory and think about how people might have disagreed with them or manipulated them. The kinds of ideal marriages and households that are described in works like this are counterposed by the rough and tumble of popular print, especially cheap ballads which poke fun at arguing couples, and by the legal records of men and women in dispute at court. So in reality, there are plenty of sources. The skill is to read them against each other. Historians will want to question, too, the degree to which women, this group, can be a subject of history. How far did women see themselves, and were they seen as a group with a coherent collective identity? In fact, this era is one of the points at which the category of women was under definition. The work women could do, their sexuality, their role in the state and in religion were all points of explicit debate. The subordinate status of women in relation to men has been historically so well established that when we first look at the early modern period through the lens of gender, we may see only familiarities. Women earn less when they earn at all. They're judged by their sexual virtue. They marry, are the victims of male violence, suffer legal discrimination. But at the same time, the specific conditions of early modern England were peculiar and worth looking at. Gender is a historical fact, not an ahistorical one. For example, the root of sexual difference in this period was not seen as medical, but as biblical. It was ordained in the texts of Genesis. Women were made to help men. Some early feminists took issue with this idea. Alongside this, the difference between women and men was understood to be based not on the skeleton, the brain, or physiology, but on humours, the fluids that regulated the body. And this idea made for a more flexible difference, like a scale, than sex, than how sex would become after 1750. So there were mannish women, womanish men, and hermaphrodites who stood between the two. We should note also that the law regulated gender relations in a way that intruded very far into what we think of as private life. It categorised some crimes as peculiarly female, like witchcraft, and it limited married women's rights to property considerably.